Welcome to the Middle Tech Spotlight Series, where we highlight entrepreneurs, investors, and ecosystem supporters that are building our startup ecosystem. Today, we are revisiting a conversation with Albert Lukanga, who we originally had on back in 2020. So since we last had him on, Albert has purchased the rights to Kentucky Fashion Week, as well as opened a flagship store called the House of Albert Couture. So his business has really taken off since we last had him on the podcast, and we are thrilled to be able to have him rejoin us on the Spotlight Series. If you're able to, this is a good one to watch on YouTube because we recorded in the House of Albert Couture at his flagship store, and it's a pretty awesome location. So if you want to see what the store looks like, you can go check out the videos or go to our social media channels where we'll be posting clips from the podcast. But before we dive into this interview with Albert, we're going to get a quick word from our sponsors. Before highlighting our sponsors, we'd just like to state that the views and content shared on this platform do not necessarily reflect those of our show sponsors. Middle Tech is presented by KY Innovation, the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development's Office of Entrepreneurship. KY Innovation exists to support and develop Kentucky's startup ecosystem, and we are proud to be supported by an organization whose mission aligns so closely with ours. If you're a founder building in Kentucky, you need to check out the resources that KY Innovation has to offer. You can find more information by clicking the link in our show notes or going to kyinnovation.com.
Middle Tech is sponsored by Bolt Marketing. Take your website to the next level with a website that's built to work. At Bolt Marketing, they're revolutionizing websites for small businesses that are affordable, customizable, and hassle-free. Whether you have a construction company, a boutique clothing store, or you own a hot yoga studio, they have options for you. Click the link in our show notes to explore their marketing options that can transform your marketing and grow your business. And as a personal note, Bolt Marketing built our website and they were awesome to work with throughout the entire process. We highly recommend working with them.
All right, welcome back to the Middle Tech Podcast. We are here in the brand new Albert Couture store shop. What do you call it exactly?
The House of Albert Couture.
The House of Albert Couture.
The reason why is because back in the days, when fashion designers would fit clientele, they'll fit them in their homes. And that's what they call it. It's called fashion houses. So it was back in Europe. And in the, you guys know how the buildings are designed in Europe. So yeah.
A little bit of history there.
Yeah.
Alongside of it. So we're here in this beautiful store. First off, congratulations on opening this. This was a few weeks ago that you opened it. I got to come to the grand opening. It was awesome to see how many people came out to support you on that. And I was kind of chuckling to myself before this recording. We have just both come such a long way, Middle Tech and Albert Couture. When we first had you on, you know, we had you on pretty shortly after you had officially kind of launched Albert Couture and you were in the Base 110 building. And we are still recording in the Awesome Inc. studio. So this is going to be a cool conversation just talking about everything that's gone on with you since we had you on that first time. That was one of our most popular episodes we put out, telling your story. So we're not going to dive into your story as much this time. Would highly recommend going back and listening to that if you don't know about Albert's story, how he got to Lexington in the first place. But just high level, tell us about Albert Couture. What is it? How did it start? You can keep that pretty high level, but just to refresh people that are tuning in for the first time.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Logan. Appreciate you guys. I'm happy to see you guys here again, man. So much to catch up on. But for those who don't know, Albert Couture is Kentucky's first fashion house, which is amazing, or way overdue. But we sell clothing, luxury clothing, through experience. And the way it sounds kind of like cliche, like, but what we do is everything is designed from scratch. We wanted this place to be a one-stop shop for each individual. Despite whatever you're looking for, whether you have a different size shoe that and you always have trouble shopping for the right shoe size or jeans or you name it, we can do it. There's some things that we've done here recently, and I'll throw that in there real quickly. I have a client here recently. He just came in. He goes, I want a bag that fits 5 suits. I want it to be all alligator leather, and I don't care how much it's going to cost. And that's the bag happened to be $38,000. That's our first. And then we didn't even know we could do that, right? So it's just like, it's ridiculous, but it's awesome that we get to be in a position where we can create and make a difference in fashion.
The first fashion house here in Kentucky, in Lexington, Kentucky. What makes Lexington, Kentucky a unique place to start a fashion house? And what's your favorite parts about this city that complement what you're doing here?
Yeah, man. Thanks, man. Evan, really great question. You know, despite having all these events that we have, right? Like we have Kentucky Derby, we have, I mean, Kingland, we have all this. And all this, if you guys think about all these events, they're all surrounded by fashion too as well, right? But all these individuals, they shop, I don't know, what's the closest place? Chicago. And that I know because I have clients in Cincinnati now and they're like, there's nothing there, right? And but Nashville, maybe a few boutiques in Nashville too as well. But it's kind of sad where people come from all over the world and to come to this beautiful event, you know, with hosts and beautiful people, and they don't have a place to walk in and get to look unique, right, if I may. Also, on that part, Kentucky was, in Lexington was a place where, you know, we came straight from, you know, my history of being in Africa and going through what I went through with, you know, with the war and all that. And Lexington was, embraced me in 06, made me, you know, made me a child here. And I played soccer here. I went to middle school here. I went to high school here. I have a lot of, my roots are too deep, in, you know, in Lexington. I'm a Lexingtonian, if I may. Sorry, Lou, I love you guys too, I promise. And, there was something missing here. And I could have gone to New York. I had a lot of individuals who, hey, come to New York, I'll help you out. Come to LA, I'll help you out. You know, but, there's nothing Lexington, man. No, you don't have your clientele there, or whatever it may be. I just, something kept telling me, like, just do it here, man. It's not because I was scared to get out of the big city, but I just wanted to be home. And I wanted to create something for my friends. I wanted to create something for people that I love and people that embraced me. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you've done exactly that. And I think one of the cool things about watching you build it here is you immediately had people that were behind you and supporting you while doing it. And I think that was very important because you started it right as COVID hit. So let's kind of go back to when you first started it there, starting it during COVID. Talk about the challenge of doing that and getting it kind of off the ground, and let's take it up to kind of where we are today.
Yeah. Oh, man, COVID. COVID, man. COVID was very interesting for me because when I left Joseph A. Bank, all these clients that I had, not everybody were pretty much handicapped, right? I had individuals that had to work and they needed clothes. And I just pretended like I was busy and these guys would call me and they're like, hey. I was like, yeah, sure, show up. And I was very fortunate during COVID to have this individual to come in and, you know, and say, yeah, I used to buy $200 suits, but I know it's COVID, but you got to buy this. My first client during COVID, I'm not going to say the name because he lives in Georgetown. He's probably going to watch this. But, you know, but he came in and my first transaction was like $28,000. And I was sweating. Like, I didn't know what to do with myself. I was like, I mean, you go from making $48,000 a year to charging your first clients during COVID, $28,000. You're like, what am I ripping this guy? Like, you know, like you like, so I give him a discount. And he looked at it.
A little bit of imposter syndrome.
Yeah. You know? And he was like, I was like, sir, I sent you the invoice through your phone, obviously COVID, you know, no touching, whatever. And he looked at it, he goes, What's the 20% discount? And I was like, oh, you know, it's COVID. You know, it's like a COVID test. And he goes, and he told me this. This is insane. And for those who are in business, this is very important, right? Like, he goes, hey, Albert, all this clothes that you're giving me for 28 grand, if it's not, you know, if it does, this item don't hold the same value and you think you're ripping me off, then give me 20% off. But if you think it's worth every single cent, you know, and you're running me the right service and the right product, then let me pay the full price.
Yeah. Especially in the early beginnings of
right.
the business. Because
right.
it's like, that's where you're sitting.
I lost my mind, man.
But we got to meet the individual you're talking about and many other business partners and investors of yours at your wedding in Mexico. And it was just really fascinating, but also inspiring how you've surrounded yourself with such amazing people willing to back you and believe in your vision. Talk to us about how you went about that and how you think about bringing in business partners to take you to the next level, because you've clearly done that since the first episode we've had. That's an important part of business, is getting the right people involved early. And you've done a great job of that. And you surround yourself with friends that are, you know, excelling in whatever given field they're in and passionate about helping others. So talk about, you know, how you managed to do that.
Man, how did I manage to do that? That's a great question.
I think there's part of you that naturally attracts that because how good you are at explaining a vision. I think that's what entrepreneurs separate themselves with, is the ability to communicate. So I think you naturally have that, but are there any other, you know, thought patterns or ways that you've gone about surrounding yourself?
Sure. Yeah. That's a really good question, actually. I do. Don't be desperate. As entrepreneurs, we tend to do that without knowing. Like, come on, like, this is what I'm doing. I'm very passionate about this. And I this. So what I did was I thought about Albert Gouteau as an individual that was going to survive without me being here, right? Like, after I'm gone, I'm long gone, what is Albert Gouteau, right? And it wasn't about me. So the way I started talking about this was, I was like, well, I don't even know when you needed to raise money or how. I did not write anything. I didn't write, like, no, I didn't write none of those things that you need to write in order for you to raise money.
No business plan.
Yeah, I have a business plan. I don't remember using it. I remember having a couple of beers with guys and just telling them my story, like, hey, listen, this is what I've built. But the funny thing with that, actually, I went back to my client. So whenever they came back to get fitted, I would just tell them, like, okay, I'm raising money if you're interested. I'm raising money if you're interested. And then people are like, you raise money? I was like, yeah. You raise. I was like, listen, you love the product. You're wearing the product. For me, it was a little bit easier, you know, to go to this individual who was spending this much cash to say, hey, I would like for you to be involved fully. What do you think? And I was very fortunate to find a younger guy. His name is Majd. And he remembered me from Starbucks when I used to write all my goals down about Albert Gouteau. This is where I was still working at Joseph A. Bank, and I was spent like hours at on Chevy Chase, if you guys ever saw me there, for credibility or whatever. But and he goes, and he's like, I remember you. I used to work at Joseph A. Bank. You helped my mom, and my mom loved you because you did such a great service. And then he goes, and I saw your Starbucks, and I asked you, and I remember you telling me your idea, and I was like, this thing is gonna fail. And then I was, and then I was going to PA school, and then after that, and you build it, and during COVID, and I watched you did your first article on her later, and I watched you, and then I was like, yeah, I was like, it's like, I was interesting now. And I was like, I'm not giving, and I remember raising that. He goes, how much money do you need? I'm like, I don't even know how much money I need. I was like, let me go back home and figure it out. And then I just looked at it, and I was like, maybe $100,000. He's like, how about if I, let's do this. Let's do double and whatever. He's like, double? I was like, how much equity do you need? He goes, I mean, the conversation was really awkward. And he's like, I don't know, 10%, maybe, is that all right? Like, he's not a business person. He goes, I'm investing in you. That's what he told me. He goes, I'm investing in you because I believed you took things on paper and you made it reality. He goes, and he calls me Abibi. He's like, Abibi, I'm scared. You know, like, what you can do with just a little cash, you know, because you didn't have any and you worked three jobs to build that. Imagine if people actually give you a check. The possibilities are endless. And that's what he mentioned to me. So that was my first phrase. We raised about, in total, I raised $250,000. And never took any bank loan or nothing like that. For in exchange of, I own 80% of the company still today. And my wife owns 10 and they bought 10 for $250,000.
Yeah. Oftentimes first round of funding is anywhere from, you know, 10 to 20%.
Friends and family.
Exactly. So how have you gone about, you know, deploying that intelligently? You know, for anybody that wants to learn from somebody that's now gotten off the ground and started a, you know, fashion label, you know, is it inventory? Is it marketing? How have you thought about, you know, growing the business with those funds?
I think for me, I always have this mindset of like, I don't have money. Like, and it's just a really good concept, like psychological test to do for entrepreneurs. Like, I pretend like I don't have money. There's two ways that I do it. When I write my goals down, my dream, anything, whether marketing or whatever, I ask, how can I get it for free? If I can get it for free, how can I get it for half? How can I get it as a collaboration? If I can get it for collaboration, how can I get it as a 50-50 thing? And then I pay full price if I can do another of those. So I'm a very bootstrapper entrepreneur, which is kind of absurd because you're building a high-end brand, you know? Yeah, but it's working, right, for me. You guys can tell by my model, I don't have inventory. I'm still hesitating to hire people. I think Logan sent me somebody. I'm just kind of like, okay, we'll see what happens.
You want to have that control of your business, of the experience. Exactly, I understand that.
Exactly. I'm very protective with the experience of what I give my clients. But soon going to hire people. But to answer your question, delegation of cash. I have a lot of mentors that are very, very big on that, where I can make phone calls and say, hey, what do you think I should do in this situation? We have done a lot in that field. Some of you guys know in town, I would make a phone call, man, and I'll ask. I was like, hey, I want to do marketing. What do you guys think? I'm thinking about doing this. This is how much it costs. And maybe you should walk into the office and do this and do that. Or like, oh, that's a great deal. And I'll pay, right? But I haven't really spent a lot of money. This year was my first time spending like $3,000 on marketing. I was frightened because like you cannot, like, oh, yeah, we'll spend $3,000 and it will like get you clients. And I'm like, I don't know, whatever. But the other one was inventory. Most of my, I'm starting to have a little bit more inventory in stock, as you guys can see. Like, you know, I have clients I can walk in and pick up an order, pick up a suit and say, I actually need to travel this weekend. I need a jacket. And they'll just grab a jacket off the rack and walk out, right? But I'm very, very grow with that. I'm probably going to keep like 25% inventory on stock. I recently got in trouble with Cameron Mayers, obviously. We can touch base about that.
Yeah, that's a war story you'll have to tell. We can jump into that. I mean, what are things that have caught you off guard, you know, about your business as you've been growing it?
Getting married.
Getting married. Yeah, you're growing a business and getting married at the same time is tough.
Yeah, I remember lots of my guys who are out there were like, why are you doing this? Like, why do you need to get married and open up a store in one year? Why can't you just do it next year? And I'm like, and I tell them, I was like, and I was basically saying the word YOLO the whole time. Then that was my only thing. I was like, YOLO. They're like, what do you mean YOLO? I'm like, I don't know. I just want to be an Epicurean this year. I don't know. We'll see what happens. And sometimes you got to take those risks, but you need balance. There's a word that I like to use, be quick to start, but patient to grow, right? I'm very quick at executing an opportunity. Like, you give me an opportunity. I mean, this location came in, I mean, I got this location this year during my planning of the wedding. Do you think I was going to let somebody else take this location? No, like,
Real quick, I want to touch on that because I think that's just such an important trait and quality of an entrepreneur is like immediately default to testing something, building something, then over analyzing it and, you know, overthinking something and just not, you know, analysis paralysis is what that called. Right. That's called, you know, so many entrepreneurs or people that want to be entrepreneurs will have a business idea and they'll spend way too much time thinking about it or not believing in themselves and it just never happens. And so I just think that's such an important quality of, you know, you and any other entrepreneur is that they just default to action immediately.
Right.
When they want to execute.
No, man. I fly with the wind, man. But I'm very, also I check my parachute at the same time. But nobody knows. Like, yeah, what are you going to do? I'm like, let's go. Let's do it. And I'm like, let me make sure I can get Uber back home or whatever. Like, but I do it in such a very quiet time. Entrepreneurs are not, we're not risk takers. You guys know that. It's just this marketing, social media thing about we high risk takers, but we actually a risk minimizer. You know, we're constantly thinking about how many ways we can die and trying to minimize that the whole time. And one way you're going to die is, you brought up finance earlier. I'm very big at having a number in the bank that just stays there, and then having another number that it's in the bank, that's in the bank that you don't know of, because that's probably going to, that's your bloodline, if I may. And another thing is, I'm constantly thinking about how many ways I could also fail in business, in our retail. In retail, I'm in the retail fashion business, high-end business, you know, inventory, that's one, rent is second, and then employees is third. If you can exclude all of them, you're king. If you can exclude two, you're okay. You're going to, you know.
Yeah, the balance. So when you start the business, massive risk being taken. But then from that point on, it's a list of things to de-risk the business, you know. And when you raise that first round of capital, you de-risked the business because now you have capital to deploy and inventory and initial, you know, salaries. So you decrease some risk there. And as you just continue to grow, you've got a checklist. You know, where is the most risk in my business for me and my stakeholders? And let me check those off. And so it is interesting. You know, entrepreneurs are extremely risk, are major risk takers, but it's our job to minimize risk.
Right.
It's kind of a unique dichotomy.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, can I curse on this? I don't know. Like, I mean, yeah, there's so many ways. Like,
whatever you want.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. There's many times, man, like, just wanted to cry, right? You know, like it's just weird stuff. And it's not even crying like, oh, crap, I'm failing. It's like, I'm starting to feel, recently, like, especially being this, bro, prior to, the journey was like very lonely, you know? It was like, nobody understands you. Everybody's like telling you, like, what are you doing? Like, you don't know what you're doing. Like, stop doing that. Just take a break. And it's just like, you just felt misunderstood. And man, like, it was an emotional process. I mean, it's just very emotional process. And then you're dealing with things that are so new and so foreign to you, like dealing with contractors as a fashion designer, like, what the hell, you know? But somehow you figure it out, right? I'll go home and I'll read YouTube videos on how to, like, how to deal with contractors, you know, like on commercial, and I'll watch them. I mean, and then I'll come back and I'll just do that. And I'm a quick, like, especially if I'm desperate, I'll pick up information rather quickly, but I won't remember people's names sometimes, you know. I remember people's names when I need to, you know? Yeah. And it's just little things like that that I'm starting to understand about myself within. When we build businesses, we think the business is separate from the individual. And I understood one thing about Albert Couteau. Like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
It's me. Like, yeah, it's like, it's internal. And for me, that's like, I couldn't, like, you know, there's no, like, you know, I was like a cyborg? Yeah, I feel like a cyborg. Like, I feel like Albert Couteau is me, and me is Albert Couteau. And literally, if you look, go downtown, people go, oh, hey, Albert, how are you doing? And they're like, yeah. I was like, I can ask them, like, what's my last name? They're like, Albert Couteau.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
That's such an important thing to talk about that I don't think is put out into the public enough. And when we talk about entrepreneurs, is how hard it is for us to separate our identity from our business.
Yeah.
You're right. In your case, it's a little bit more intertwined, very intertwined. But I've recently, you know, been struggling with that. That's something that, you know, I think is important, especially when you're building a product like outside of yourself. Again, you've got a unique scenario. But if you're like me building, you know, software companies and things don't go as planned, you're right. When that pressure gets on you, you know, it just makes you want to cry, and it's a lot, and you isolate yourself or you feel isolated. But I think one of the important things to understand is, you know, there's, you know, all that stress, but your identity is not wrapped up in that.
Exactly.
And I think, again, you're in a unique situation, but I also think it's important for you to still try to separate the two. And that's hard. It's really hard as an entrepreneur.
Man.
And it leads to just a lot of, you know, side effects. you know, emotionally that I don't think, you know, people talk about enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've recently, you know, I've been going through that. And I think the way that I get through it is, you know, again, telling myself that, you know, as a business owner, especially in the early stages, it's a series of experiments that you're running to see if you've got something that has legs. Mm. And you've got to view it through that lens, because if an experiment doesn't work and you feel that pressure, at the end of the day, it's just an experiment, you know? And so you kind of got to micro break up the business into individual experiments to take the pressure and weight off your back.
Right.
Because if you let one individual thing that you test or one individual poor client experience,
right,
you know, weigh you down, which right. we can talk about that horror story. But if you let that put too much pressure on yourself and you don't separate yourself from your business,
right,
it'll crush you.
Right. Right.
And it forces you to think more about yourself. And that's one thing that I've been going through over the last several months. You know, my software company, you know, we're in a stage where, you know, it's not what we wanted. And so what it makes you do is it makes you look internally on yourself, because your identity is intertwined. And if you are able to, you know, use that stress and that, you know, hardship to look inward and figure out more about yourself and your strengths and weaknesses, and the next time that next experiment's going to go better, or if the business doesn't go well, that next business, you know how to handle better. And so it's, I think it's just, we need to talk about that more as entrepreneurs, identity. Right. And then we need to talk about, you know, how do we view our business to take that weight off our shoulders? And then how do we look inward when things don't go right? And I don't think that those things are talked about enough in culture in general, but especially in the entrepreneurial community, because it is lonely.
Yeah.
You know, you are running so much of your business and putting so much pressure on yourself. Who do you talk to?
Right.
Other than other entrepreneurs and maybe your investors.
Right.
So it's really hard to talk about.
I can sit here and just, sometimes the things that I've done, some of the things I just like, I don't even know how I got out of that. Like, I did it.
Cameron, let's tell the Cameron story.
Oh yeah, Cameron. I love you, brother. Congratulations, by the way. You and Annie, for sure. Beautiful couple. So Cameron comes over, if I'm not mistaken, probably like 3 days or so before I fly out to Mexico for my own wedding. He goes, hey, hopefully I'm on time. I need to get myself together for my wedding. I was like, all right, let's do it. I was like, so we're going to order something before I leave. When I come back, then we'll get you fitted and get you ready for your wedding. I was like, sure. So he ordered something very interesting. So he ordered, the top was white, slacks were black, you know, shoes were black, ordered a shirt, taxi, black tie, right? So anyways, I took the order, it's great. Sent him the invoice, paid for it, came back, back from Mexico. The order came in, pressed it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, great. Cameron's stuff is here. This is fantastic. It's on time, got it priced, got it ready, text him, showed up, saw the white BMW, showed up here in the run, and then he walked in. He's like, yeah, man. He's like, are you excited? He's like, man, I'm excited. I was like, great. He goes, all right. I was like, get in there, change. I was like, put the slacks on and put the white shirt on, and I'll do the rest when you come out. So normally we don't have mirrors and changers, so like the client comes out, put cufflinks on, put everything on, help him tie the bow tie. And he's looking in the mirror the whole time, by the way. And then like, we're just yapping and talking and laughing or whatever. And then took the jacket off. And I was very excited. I always do the jacket last, put the jacket on him. He goes, oh man, this fits good. I was like, yeah, man. He's like, yeah, this is great. You like it? He's like, yeah, I like it. He's like, and he goes, question though. He goes, is this the jacket? I was like, yeah, this is the jacket. He's like, is this the jacket? If you guys know Cameron Myers, he's a very practical person. He's very thorough. You know, he likes to plan things months prior to, you know, like, so imagine getting surprised for his wedding. So I was like, yeah. He goes, I was like, yeah, the jacket's great. It's black. It's fantastic. He goes, I think we got a white jacket. I was like, really? I remember looking at him. I was tying his bow tie. I was like, really? He goes, yeah. I was like, and I was just like, oh, shit. He goes, yeah, fuck, shit. And he goes, and then I said, and then I remember him saying, literally saying this, I hope the wife is not listening. He's like, Annie's gonna kill me. He's like, yeah, he was not, and he started sweating. I started sweating. So we're both sweating. I'm cute. I was like, I don't even, I'm like, we were just like sweating. And I said, and I, this whole time we're talking, I'm proceeding to like fix the black jacket on him. You know, like, I mean, just think about that. I'm just like, he goes, what are we gonna do? He's like, honestly, I don't have an answer for you right now. He's like, we'll figure it out. But call me at 8 p.m. At that time, it was like 5:30. Call me at 8 p.m. tonight and go home. Don't tell Annie anything. Just like the fitting was great. And then I'll call you at 8 p.m. with some answer. He goes, oh, man, yeah. I was like, yeah, we'll figure it out. So he left. On the way back, he texts me. He's like, you sure you can pull this off? I was like, I think I can. I don't know yet, but how I'm going to do it, but I think I can. He gets home. He goes, are you sure we can pull this off? I'm like, yes, I think we can. So what happened was, obviously, the jacket was the wrong order. What I did was, when I add the fabric, the slacks fabric in the system prior to thinking about my own wedding, this is pure pressure, thinking about, I don't know, a million things at the same time. I put black. I put the wrapper. I just put anybody who was black for the jacket and the slacks, and I didn't put the white jacket on there. So the order came in perfectly. But in my mind, everything was perfectly fine. But the funny thing about that was, despite him telling me that he wanted a white jacket, came back home, I had people in my own wedding that were wearing the opposite. You know, the white jacket, slacks were black, and I still don't remember. So what is the lesson to learn here? I think you should not take clients in when you're under pressure. In terms of what am I trying to say? Come on in, I'll just see you right now really quickly. You know, you need to understand, well, that individual taking the energy, time, and money to come to you, they want 100% investment from you, right? So I was 50% without even me knowing, because I was so blinded, right, by my little energy running around and realizing, oh, crap, I'm not actually 100%, and things like that occurred. The other thing I learned from this was, just be honest with your client. And I was honest. I told him, I don't know. I could have made up anything. But somehow, when I ordered a jacket for my wedding, the white jacket, I ordered extra. And it just happened to be a size 39, and the camera was a 36. So we had to reconstruct the whole entire jacket to his body. You guys know how tight, but yeah, how tight the camera is. So, so we got it done. And he got fitted on Thursday. Got fitted on Thursday. The wedding was on Saturday. I had 1 day to reconstruct the entire jacket. And then I said, Cameron, I'm showing up to the wedding at the apiary, and I'm going to dress you myself. He goes, are you sure? I'm like, yes. That's how much you need to believe in me. I had to make sure, let him know that you can trust me. You know, I showed up. He showed up late because he was over, he was hungover, by the way. Yeah. You should. Yeah. And I was there. And I met his dad. His dad looked at me and goes, you Albert, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right. He's like, I was like, oh, he's like, how do you know? I was like, well, you're wearing sunglasses indoor and you're wearing, he's like, wearing sunglasses indoor and then you're wearing, you got the red shoes. And I was like, yeah, so I wear it. I was like, I'm here for your son. So anyways, I ended up dressing him. And I looked him in the eyes and I said, Cameron, are you ready? He goes, he just gave me a hug. He said, man, I love you, man. You did fantastic, man. Thank you, man, for everything that you've done. And I realized one thing. At Albert Couture, we sell experiences. You guys pay me $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 for product, for clothing, not because of the clothes. You guys could go for that I know to the mall, whatever, Express, and get a suit on. But you guys pay me for these issues, for things like this. When things like this goes a-hole, what do pilots get paid for? The pilots, they don't get paid six figure, seven figure to to fly a plane. They get paid when the plane is going cuckoo, and he's there to make it happen and fix it and save lives. And I related to that.
Yeah, and you do a great job of that. I mean, another micro example of that is at your wedding. We're getting out of the bus. You're getting ready to walk down the aisle, and I get out of the bus, and I don't know how to tie a bow tie. You know, buying a suit from you is the first time I've bought something that nice in my life. Like, I'm just not a, I haven't been a clothing guy up to this point in my life. Now I feel like I have to, given what I got from you. And it's just like an amazing product, and it just feels so good. But we were getting off the bus, and you're getting ready to walk down the aisle of your wedding, like literally 2 to 5 minutes. You're like, you're ready. Like, the wedding's about to start. And I get out of the bus, and you see I don't have my bow tie tied, and you tie my bow tie. Like, you got so much going on. You're getting ready. Karina's over there. She's probably like, what in the world's going on? But like, you're getting ready to get married, and who knows how many things are rushing through your mind.
Right.
And you take the time to take care of, you know, me, one of your clients, to just tie my bow tie. That's another micro example of, you know, and people are laughing, you know, laughing at me especially, but you know, it's an awesome example.
We need to post that video. That video is hilarious.
Oh, there was a video?
Yeah, I got a video. Yeah, you posted it on your story. I took a video of you standing there tying his bow tie, right?
I don't even remember what I posted.
You're all dressed up. You had so much going on.
Yeah.
Gosh, no, I completely agree with everything Evan's saying. There is similar experience that, that I've had with just getting all my stuff. And you just make stuff happen. You just make it happen. You figure out a way to get it done. To kind of transition to another topic that I want to cover here, you recently got Kentucky Fashion Week. So let's talk about that. What does that actually entail? What are you hoping to do with it? Tell us about Kentucky Fashion Week.
That's, we bought the rights, our recruiter bought the rights to Kentucky Fashion Week, meaning, so Kentucky Fashion Week was an organization that the plan was to basically enhance the experience of fashion, to put some light on fashion in Kentucky and whatever. Don't really remember exactly, but when I got the rights from Ed Markey, and Edwin at Critton and Rawlings was there. We were at Lockbox. We signed the right to our couture, meaning so every single fashion, so basically you said, I mean, it's kind of like weirdly saying that you need to have an approval through our couture in order for you to have a proper fashion show. so if
power
you don't...
move.
Yeah, right. So if you don't have... in approval, well, the mayor says, you know, soon the governor will say that. But there's so many artists in town, so many in Louisville, wherever in Kentucky, right? Everybody wants to be part of the fashion. There's always two things. They either want to become a fashion designer or then become a model. But people don't understand how to create a business from it. And I wanted to take over that and teach people, educate individual on how to balance those things. What are you, an artist or are you an entrepreneur or are you both? And how do you balance that? How do you raise money? How do you, and you guys know me, everything that I've mentioned to you guys prior to, I'll follow through because I'm always so afraid to look into your face and tell you guys everything that I told you was completely false and I chickened out, you know, basically, right? So I don't know. Is it a cocky thing? I don't know. Is it a comment? I have no idea. I still don't know. But it just, that's just how I function. But with Kentucky Fashion Week, I wanted to basically control everything about fashion in the state of Kentucky. Whether it's Kentucky Derby or you name it. If you guys, yes, a boutique, by all means, you can have a fashion show in your basement. I'm not saying anything, but you can have a fashion show in your own boutique, but it's not considered true fashion if it's not under the house of Robert Couture.
Nice. Power moves. Again, that's awesome. I love that. And, you know, one thing you've done recently that's, you know, a big move in the business is open up where we are right now, this office. Give us an idea of, you know, your thinking behind how to create an environment for what you do. Like you said, it's an experience. We've been in here a few times, you know, grand opening and have bought clothing. You've given us the experience. So give, you know, the listeners and the viewers of this a sense of Albert Couture, this house. What is this like that we're in?
Thanks. Sorry, I'm trying to keep putting the microphone down. forgetting that I have to answer like this. Abracato Suite 140 is located, 576 East 3rd Street, Lexington, Kentucky. It's in the building called The Mat, M-E-T, okay? But you can just Google Abracato and kind of figure out Google. I'm trying to work on the analysis part. But I wanted to, if you walk into this place, I hate the feeling of boutique, and there's nothing wrong with boutiques. I'm just a different alien, if I may. I would like to walk into places, not being bombarded by people like, oh, welcome. How are you? How can I help you? What do you need?
Traditional retail.
Yeah, this is the sale that we have today or whatever. This is 50% off. I'm like, wow, that's kind of sad. But the other thing was also give people an experience of, man, I feel like I'm home. I feel like what I've done with this place here, I got a little wet bar down there and you can watch the ball game when you're here. It's fairly close to downtown. So clients can come in and have a bourbon or an espresso or champagne or you name it, we have it almost maybe. And you can sit down and relax. And while we design pieces for you that you never had or anybody ever had, right? So I am all about that ease of mind. When you come to me, you spend your hard-earning money. You want to make sure you feel it. You want to make sure. If you ever spend so much money, you walked out of a place like, what the hell have I done? That guy got me, right? Those are the guys who are really good at those are the guys who are really good at like psychology. They get you what in front, and when you leave, you're like, oh man, he got me. Like, why do we have to live life like this? Why can't you just be like, you know what? I'm glad I spent that much money, And don't get me wrong, I had clients who have like come to me and say, hey, I've spent this much money with you. I don't know. And they'll come in to put a piece on there. It's worth it, right? And since I started business, it's been almost 4 years now. And it's crazy, right? I've never heard any returned. I've had a couple complaints, and I kid you not, you call those clients today, they're happy, right? And I'm saying this sincerely because you guys know me. I would never allow a client to go to a place like social media or anything and be like, I went to Abracato, this was a horrible experience. Your pants are horrible. They don't fit well. We're going to do it again and again and again. Even if I take a negative, I'll make sure it's right. Okay. But don't take advantage of this, guys. But I just wanted to say, right, which is amazing. And I haven't really thought about that. But I wanted this to be an experience environment, whether you're female or male, you come in here, you got a kid, you can just sit on the couch, ease back, relax, and then let's make you a gown, let's make you whatever you want. Now 10 to 6, we do appointments only. Noon to 4, we do walk-ins. But I wanted you, when you walk in, you've booked an appointment for $100. The whole entire place is yours, right? There's nobody walking in here. That's the reason we're able to do a podcast and all that, because nobody's walking in here and saying, hey, do you got that tie? You have any red tie or green tie? Do you have any socks? Like, no. The world is changing. Shopping's going to change. Products are going to change. Experience is going to change. Your medicine is going to change. Everything's going to be customized and catered to each individual. And you guys know that, truly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like I said when we first started this podcast, it's been incredible just to see how far this business has come and how far you as an entrepreneur have come. We always like ending these podcasts talking about the future vision, where you want to go and kind of the near-term future. So when you think of the next 3 to 5 years, for Abracato, what does that look like? Where are you taking this business?
Right. It's easy. Seen it, thought it, I see it, it's going to happen. Picture this. You go to Ritz-Carlton, you go to Rosewood. Before you get there, you walk into your suite, okay? You open your closet, Abracato is in there, and it fits you perfectly. You dress, you do your thing, you go to dates, you do whatever, you put it back in your closet, the hotel sends it back to us, we clean it, fix it. By the time you get back to Lexington, you're here, couple of days or so prior to after that, after you get back, your products are back in your closet. We want to be where our clients are thinking of going. We want to be there first. You thinking about partnership of, so that's the concierge service that we're going to add to our repertoire.
Essentially, to hit on that, just to make sure I'm understanding it right. So concierge service that you're managing not only the fitting of the clothing, the experience of the clothing, but the logistics around managing the clothing to and from events and travel. So yes, they don't have to think about that at all. It's just there.
Right. To add on that, Evan, you want to get a private flight out of Lexington to go to Cincinnati or whatever. You talk to me while you're getting fitted. We get you the jet, right? You want to get a reservation of Ruby's because it's so packed. You talk to us. We get you in Ruby's. You want to get into, I don't know, Derby that day because you're like, crap, I forgot to buy tickets. We get you into Derby. Literally, truly, one-stop shop.
Of a luxury lifestyle.
It's a live lecture.
An experience.
Exactly. So we're going from experience to lifestyle. There's a Manchester hotel. You go there, you get a suite. We fit you in there, right? You're thinking about partnering up with the businesses that make our clients' life easier, whether they're traveling, whether they're eating, whether they're driving, right? Lex Exotic have done a really something unique that we're going to be talking soon with them, right? Things like that. So viable, so important, right? It's not just clothing anymore, right? It's an experience enhanced into our lifestyle.
I love that. I love that, man. We're right here cheering you on for the whole thing.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you. I got to add.
Yeah.
So that is just one part of the, you said 3 years.
Yeah. Tell us more.
And then we're going to have our Roberto Jewelry Store. So it's going to be a custom jewelry where you customize your own watches straight out of Geneva, where you can get whatever diamond you want. And we get it done just like how you do clothing with us, right? And then so we got the concierge service, we got the jewelry side, and then we have the clothing side.
I love it. I love the massive vision. Well, we'll be excited to have you on in another 3 to 5 years, and hopefully we'll be doing the next podcast from a private plane or something 30,000 feet in the air.
Let's do it.
All right, Albert. Yeah. It was great talking to you, man. Congrats on all the success
Thank
up to
you,
this
man.
Point. And
appreciate you.
We're excited to see where it goes.
See you, brother.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate you guys.